Novelist Brian Hall says his job begins where the historical record ends. Hall wrote a book about the transcontinental journey of Lewis and Clark, which began 200 years ago. He started with the facts, like a letter that Meriwether Lewis wrote to his future partner appealing for William Clark to come along. Hall took the title of his novel from a sentence in that letter: "I should be extremely happy in your company."
If therefore there is anything under those circumstances in this enterprise which would induce you to participate with me in its fatigues, its dangers, and its honors, believe me, there is no man on earth with whom I should feel equal pleasure in sharing them as with yourself.
Novelist Brian Hill thinks there's a story hidden behind those words, and he spoke to NPR's Jackie Lighton.
Maybe you could start, before we get to the fiction, with some of the fact of the expedition, the invitation by Meriwether Lewis to William Clark to join him.
I think the letter that I just read is in some ways a very strange letter, and I'm not sure that historians have quite stressed how strange it is. It's a military expedition, and yet Lewis is offering to Clark an equal command, which is a ridiculous proposition on a military expedition. If there was any disagreement between the two of them, and they both really were captains, it would be disastrous. He says that Jefferson authorized him to say it, and I have wondered whether, in fact, Lewis just makes this up on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
He had a record of telling things to his mother in letters that he wanted her to believe, and then went on and did something completely different.
What was the relationship between the two men as far as you surmise? First of all, Meriwether Lewis had actually served under Clark on the frontier before the expedition ever got underway.
Lewis, we all can be fairly sure, admired and liked Clark. And when he had this opportunity to bring on a subordinate, felt that he wanted to bring him on as an equal. And it was that intense desire to make them equal that kind of caught my attention. And when he goes farther on in the letter and says, "You can come along as my friend. You don't even have to come as an official member." That's even stranger than the offer that he be a co-captain.
So you think that perhaps there was some longing here by Lewis,
yes,
for Clark?
Lewis, I think, was certainly a very lonely man. And so the question for a novelist is, where is that loneliness come from, and why did it seem insoluble for him? And the one thing I think one can plausibly say from the record, even as a historian, not as a novelist, is that Lewis did not seem to be physically attracted to women. So I think one can say that perhaps he was not heterosexual. And then the interesting novelist's job is to try to imagine what kinds of psychological options there are for a person in the early 19th century who was not heterosexual to organize their feelings and their energies in ways that they can find acceptable to themselves.
In this book, you have done something rather incredible here. You've entered the mind of each of the major protagonists of the journey, not only Lewis and Clark, but also Sacagawea, the young Indian woman, and her husband. You know, you just couldn't ask for a better cast of characters to be handed to you by history than these.
Absolutely. And I'm not an adventure writer, which is why it's curious I ended up doing this novel. I'm a novelist of character. It's what has always interested me. And there is this whole set of interesting personality relationships, the relationship between Lewis and Clark, and the amazing life of Sacagawea and what it must have felt like to her to go from this life of exile all the way across the country with this baby, have the baby then eventually taken away from her.
By Clark.
By Clark. I think that's also a footnote to the expedition that hasn't been properly examined by historians, we don't have any records of her feelings, of course, so perhaps it really is the novelist's job to look at that silence.
Well, let's look at that silence into which you've brought this, what I think is remarkable language of Sacagawea. Now, first of all, we don't know how she sounded, although you refer to some texts in the footnotes to your book, places where you read stories about her or stories she is said to have told, but I'd like you to introduce us to her as you've imagined her, with the language that you invent for her. Would you do that for us, please?
Shouts. This one ducked, twisting away from maybe arrow or head crusher, touched earth and threw looks around. One thumb was galloping, pointing back to the Turtle Rock. The middle river there had become spitting white water, and out of the spray were born horsemen raging forward. They were not people. This one lunged into the red berry bush, away but the wrong way, slowed down by thicket. She thrashed through to the grass and ran. She was going to die.
Now, this is Sacagawea's rendition in your fiction about an attack, the attack that takes her away from her tribe, who you call the We People. And Sacagawea in the novel is calling herself This One. It took me a minute or two to work that out. But where did you come up with that construction that she would refer to herself as This One?
When I was working on her chapters, I was consulting a Shoshone dictionary and a grammar and a thesaurus. And in the grammar, I noticed that the Shoshone language doesn't have a third person personal pronoun. They don't use he, what we call he or she. Instead, they use the demonstrative, this or that, even when referring to people. And the idea of her thinking of herself as this one really appealed to me because it felt, in a way, the connotation was as though there was some kind of all-seeing spirit that was choosing what happened to different people. This one would be captured. That one would die. And that would be true for a lot of the choices I made in the language here. I took elements that served my purposes thematically, but had some relation to the Shoshone language.
It's not just the language that you use with the Native Americans, but in general, your language in this book is period. And there were words here, sesquipedalian, abita, middens, something called an annual. I mean, is this stuff Latin or what is it?
Well, when I was doing the book, I was, of course, reading the journals extensively. And there's so much in the journals to read. You just read and read, and you pick these things up. And one of the reasons I found Lewis's voice fun to write in was that, like his mentor Jefferson, he's hyper-articulate. And hyper-articulate narrators are fun because they give you, of course, a lot of space to maneuver in. And yet, psychologically, I think what is interesting with hyper-articulate people is that they can hide from themselves certain issues either of practicality or of emotion or self-knowledge that can be obscured through this wonderful facility with language.
Yes.
And, of course, that's my reading of Lewis, and it's very much a possible reading of Thomas Jefferson as well.
Well, Brian, thank you very much for being with us. The novel is called I Should Be Extremely Happy in Your Company, a novel of Lewis and Clark. The author is Brian Hall. Brian, thanks again.
Thank you for having me.
NPR's Jackie Leighton.